Are you an accredited investor looking for a new opportunity to generate passive income and build the retirement of your dreams? Then elevate your investment game with Viking Capital, where wealth meets wisdom. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out, Viking Capital can help guide you towards financial freedom through passive real estate investing. With strong and transparent underwriting, Viking identifies low-risk opportunities with the goal of preserving investor capital and maximizing long-term growth potential. And their accessible and responsive investor relations team will help you understand how each investment will impact your unique financial goals. With $800 million in assets acquired, more than $230 million in equity raised, and more than 5,000 units under management, Viking Capital is your path to early retirement. To learn about Viking Capital's latest investment opportunity, which is available for you right now, visit go.vikingcapllc.com/best. That's go.vikingcapllc.com/best to get started today. Did you know that within a decade, women will hold $30 trillion in investable assets? Yet somehow, only 19% of women reported feeling confident in selecting investments that align with their long-term goals. Our friends at InvestHer are out to change that. InvestHerCon is the number one premier conference for women in real estate, and it's happening June 2nd through the 4th in Austin, Texas. InvestHerCon is not just another real estate conference. It's a transformational experience focused on real estate investing, business strategies, and self-care tactics, all designed to help women take control of their financial futures. Gain the knowledge and skills you need to grow your portfolio and build a sustainable business, all while connecting with over 500 women who are playing at the same level. To learn more and to get your tickets, visit InvestHerCon.com today and use the code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. That's InvestHer, HERCon.com, promo code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. Quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities or to make or consider any investment or course of action. For more information, go to bestevershow.com.
Success doesn't happen overnight. It's the stringing together of ongoing, daily, repetitive steps forward.
Welcome to the Best Ever Show, the world's longest running daily commercial real estate podcast. Our hosts interview commercial real estate experts every day to get you the best advice ever with none of the fluffy stuff.
Best ever listeners, welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show. I'm Slocum Reed, and mark your calendars for the Best Ever Conference, April 9th to the 12th in Salt Lake City. You can go to besteverconference.com to secure your ticket today, and you can use the code CONNECT, C-O-N-N-E-C-T, to save 15% on your tickets. That's besteverconference.com. Today, we're joined by Gideon Pfeffer, who's joining us from Clawson, Michigan. His company is the GSH Group. He's the CEO and managing partner. GSH Group owner operates large apartment communities throughout the country. Their current portfolio consists of 6,500 multifamily units in 20 communities spanning six states. Gideon, can you tell us a little bit more about your background and what you're currently focused on?
Yeah, thanks, Logan. It's really nice to be here. I appreciate the invite.
You bet.
My background is residential investing of all shapes and sizes. I started as a residential mortgage broker, right? When people were buying a house and they needed to get a mortgage to buy that house, that was me. That was like right after college. And I wish that I could say I had a vision of what I wanted to do when I got out of college, but that's kind of where I ended up. Learned about real estate and was convinced by a friend of mine to go out and buy an investment property together. So we pulled up some cash. We bought a property. We fixed it up. We put a renter in it. And then we sold it to an investor as a cash flowing property. And then we took that profit and we bought two more, did the same thing, bought four more, did the same thing, bought eight more. And before we knew it, a couple of years later, I guess we were buying and selling 100, 150 houses a year.
Wow.
So that was my late 20s and early 30s, a high volume single family aggregator. We raised some money and we started aggregating pools of 50 to 100 houses for institutional capital. This is in the early days of the single family push.
What years was that?
2010 to 2013. in the midst of the global financial crisis and foreclosure crisis, we were opportunistic. So firms like Blackstone's arm of single family is Invitation Homes, but Invitation Homes either didn't exist or was just getting started and they needed boots on the ground to deploy capital. So we were one of those groups, dabbled in Build to Rent back then. It was called Build to Rent, believe it or not, in 2012 and 2013 also. And that was solving for builders with developed lots that couldn't build for folks because banks weren't giving out mortgages. So we'd pair up a builder who controlled a subdivision of unbuilt homes with an institutional group that wanted new construction single family homes and play arbitrage, make some fees in the middle. And 2015, I finished a joint venture where I bought and fixed up and sold about 700 houses. And I was tired. So my wife and I took a break throughout 2016, traveled to a bunch of conferences and unique destinations, envisioned like, what do we want the next chapter of our life and career to look like? And overwhelmingly, multifamily was what kept hitting the board for us. How do we create a business that's a little bit less of a trader business? It was always fees, fix and flip, sell, make a fee, all ordinary income. How do we use what we learned over the last 10 years and create something that could make us cash up front, but also passive income and create wealth? So I reached out to a couple guys that were a little bit older than me that had specific value in creating the GSH group. And we set out to build a portfolio of multifamily homes. That was in 2017. And the rest is history, but there's a lot of stories along the way.
It sounds like you were succeeding at a very high level in that single family aggregation space. You may have mentioned already or started to mention, why is it that you transitioned out of that?
I had a lot of success in the single family aggregation space. And the main reason I transitioned out of it was, at the time, my experience in that space was that it was hard to raise organized capital around single family in general, right? Scattered site single family. And it was harder in 2010 and 2012 and 2014 than it is today, frankly. I think at this point, single family is a well-accepted space and it's easier to get equity and debt financing for that. But that wasn't my experience up until that point. And also, my experience in that space was, even though I was fixing up properties and selling them, it wasn't your true fix and flip. I would put a renter in and I would sell it as a cash flowing turnkey investment. I didn't enjoy the management of scattered site single family properties. And the business model was all based on ordinary income and sales. So at the beginning of the year, I needed to start over. I may have sold 200 houses in a year, but come January, I had to start all over. So I wanted to take the lessons that I learned in single family residential investment, construction, and property management, and evolve into a business model that would not only pay me some money up front, but it would also create wealth, create passive income, and give me upside whenever the exit might be, right? All the reasons that a lot of us want to get involved in multifamily or commercial real estate, that was true for me as well. So I felt like the next evolution of my career was to move from scattered site single family to larger multifamily.
Gideon, I'm leading up to a question that I want to make sure I ask the right way. It's going to be fairly a blunt, cut to the chase kind of question, but I want to make sure my assumptions are correct. So when you were big in the single family space, you were effectively an aggregator for larger firms. It sounds like you were still in the owner-operator space where you were expected to manage these properties after they had been acquired.
Yes and no. So we had one division where we were selling to larger institutions. We didn't manage those, but we were also selling to your more mom and pop individual investors who were buying one to maybe 10 houses.
Kind of turnkey style?
Straight up turnkey. Yeah. We're not the original turnkey, but we were doing it relatively early in the space, coming right out of the financial crisis. At one point, I managed 400 single family houses for 200 investors in five different countries, and it was a nightmare. And I don't think I did it that well, but I learned enough to be dangerous about property management. We did all the construction and turns of our homes and renovation. So I learned a lot about construction. And I just wanted to up level to a more institutional type organization, and I wanted to do it under a larger footprint. You can buy 200 single family houses as 200 roofs in lots of different locations, or you can buy a garden style multifamily complex with 200 units in one location. It just seemed to make a little bit more sense to me. At the time, I thought it would simplify things a bit more. And I've learned over time that when you have 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 units, you have a whole new set of challenges and complications, but it just seemed like the next evolution of our career.
Gideon, you made the transition from residential real estate investing to commercial real estate investing at a very high level and at a very large scale. But the same questions and concerns that a lot of residential investors have getting into commercial, I think still apply here. And I know one of the things that held me back from real estate syndication and the value add business plan first was understanding the financial models for the general partnership, how it is that I was going to make money. And so I want to ask here, Gideon, when you were doing single family investing at a very large scale, where is it that your company's profit or your income came from? Was it in the transacting? Was it in the management or the operation of cash flowing rentals? And then again, where does the profit for GSH come from the way that you're currently structured with the larger apartment buildings?
If I'm hearing you correctly, you're trying to compare and contrast income from the two different businesses or business models to try and understand why I would leave one company.
That's part of it. And I recognize that there are other motivating factors here as well, that single family, especially when you're in management, is going to be much more time intensive than on a unit by unit or property by property or on an AUM by AUM basis than large multifamily.
I know how to answer.
Go for it.
So back when I was doing single family, the nature of the business, we didn't own the properties long term. We didn't own them and manage them for ourselves and earn money off of the income from rents collected. We would buy a property and we would put our own renovations dollars into it, and then we would sell it hopefully at a profit. Or we would buy a property, immediately sell it to an investor, and then have the investor send us the renovation dollars. So my money was always earned on a sale, which was typically, I would say all the time, I would own the property less than a year. So I didn't benefit from capital gains, and I was only as good as my next sale. So fast forward to the multifamily business. We, like many syndicators or many GPs, were able to earn a fee up front upon acquisition. We also invest our dollars, some of our own money, in the property pari passu with investors that hopefully earns a distribution, some sort of return on that money. And then we also earn a promote or success fee. So I've gone from one transactional income stream in single family to a three-tiered income stream in multifamily through an acquisition fee up front, through ongoing passive income from cash flow from operations, hopefully. And then if the property is successful as the general partner or the GP, there's a promote where my partners and I get a portion of the profits above a certain preferred return. So we're making money in the beginning, during ownership, and at the end. Hopefully that answers the question.
It does. That makes a lot of sense. This podcast is not an opportunity to promote any deals that are currently going on, Gideon. So I'm not asking about anything that may currently be under contract or anything you'd currently be raising for, but what is the most recent deal that you all have closed?
Closed in like acquisition or closed in
acquisition? Sale? Yes, sorry.
I'm going to give you two answers, if that's okay, because it's a unique time. So we've not been super active in 2022 and 2023. We purchased two properties in 2022 and started development on 90 units ground up. And then the last property that I bought that was an existing property was in March of 2023. And that was a 320 unit, brand newly constructed and delivered A-class asset in Grand Rapids, Michigan, that we paid about $95 million for. And Grand Rapids, we're based in Michigan, and Grand Rapids is on the west side of the state. And besides Ann Arbor, where U of M is, which is its own little bubble, the western part of Michigan is probably the best for real estate and demographics and population and average median income. So we really liked the location and had already owned about 200 units there. The most recent acquisition that we've made, which is not like an existing community, was through an RFP, we bought a old schoolhouse in an affluent community in Michigan called Grosse Pointe. We bought it from the city and we're doing an adaptive reuse on that property, turning it into 18 luxury apartment units and building 8 townhomes for sale on the site in that active project that we're working on at the moment.
Yeah, those are 3 very different kinds of projects. Are you involved a lot in investor relations for GSH?
Yeah, as the CEO, I'm the face and the mouthpiece. I've got great investor relations support team that make me look good, but I'm the one doing the final review on all the reports. We over-communicate. We're given property updates on a monthly basis and quarterly reports, but I'm also doing webinars and videos and such. So,
where would you say your specialty is?
Like Gideon's specialty?
Yes. Within the acquisition, operations, and finance of GSH.
Coming from and knowing my background, having talked about my background, having been in residential investment of one way, shape, or form from the finance side originally to brick and mortar boots on the ground with the single family plays, I've got a lot of tactical experience from identifying opportunities, underwriting opportunities, organizing equity and capital around the opportunity, and then overseeing the operations and communicating the ongoing. I have done every single part of the business other than accounting. That's like the one piece. I've never gone into QuickBooks and messed around, nor do I really want to, but I can read a balance sheet and P&L pretty well at this point, or financial package of a property. But I think that my superpower is people seem to get to know me and like me and trust me very quickly. I'm very transparent and communicative. So that's really served me well as a leader within the organization, as well as organizing and being able to raise the amount of money that we raised to be able to acquire and build the portfolio that we have. I think my superpower is that people like and trust me pretty quickly, and hopefully I'll continue to use that superpower for good.
Nice. In your acquisitions the last couple of years, Gideon, you have a variety of business plans involved, from ground up construction to repurposing a church building to buying just delivered Class A new construction in Grand Rapids, you were saying. I'm sure the answer to this question is complex, Gideon, but thinking about our limited partner listeners and thinking about your experience in investor relations the last couple of years in raising capital for those deals that are now closed, speaking broadly, and I want you to get into specifics, but I have to ask the question broadly, what is investor sentiment right now among LPs? What is it that you're seeing about the return expectations that they have and how they impact things like preferred returns and promotes?
So I think from my experience and what I'm living on a day-to-day basis today in 2024, but even in 2023, investor sentiment is completely different than what it was in 2021 and earlier. I'm seeing investors be a lot more cautious about deploying capital. I think a lot of folks are waiting for some fear to subside and the idea of good deals to surface, distressed deals to surface, and the idea of preferred returns and promote splits have gone backwards from a sponsor perspective, where originally when we started off in 2017, we were offering a higher preferred return. And then as the years went on and our track record grew going into 2020, 2021, as our preferred return offering could become lower, which is more advantageous for a sponsor. Now we're having to offer much higher return profiles for investors. It's harder to raise money. I think that it has to do with the market, the sharp rise in interest rate. I think it has to do with micro level from our existing investors. We were very active throughout 2017 through 2021, but we purchased properties in late 2021 and 2022 at the top of the market, and circumstances and market factors around post-COVID inflation, high interest rates have turned those business plans a bit on their heads. So what we're doing is solving for that and over-communicating. But when I think when an investor sees that a business plan isn't going according to plan, despite whether it's within an operator's control or not, they become more hesitant, more cautious. And I think that we're in that trough period within a market cycle where a lot of folks are waiting until others jump in. We hear about hundreds of billions of dollars on the sidelines waiting for distress. I think it's starting to slowly be deployed, but I don't think it's in vogue at the moment to be making a ton of alternative investments. I thought that once the Fed said we're done raising rates and the market had a little time to stabilize to what the new normal looks like, then things would open up a bit. And I think we're in the middle of that period, right? We believe the Fed is done raising rates and we are where we are now. And I think we're going to have to wait until, unfortunately, there are sponsors out there that can't refinance or sell their properties at what they wanted to and have to get out quickly with in urgency and in distress. And I know that I can raise money around distress, and I know that I can raise money around a brand new asset, but kind of just your bread and butter existing multifamily deal with a decent return, something that would be very easy for us to organize capital around in 2019, 20, and 21. That's a little bit more of a challenge. It has to have a story and a sizzle right now. That was a long-winded answer. I'm sorry.
We'll get back to the show. But first, some sponsors I'm confident you'll find value in learning more about.
If you want to do bigger and better commercial real estate deals, take your real estate capital raising efforts to new heights with syndicationattorneys.com. With more than 20 years of real estate and investing experience, syndicationattorneys.com goes beyond just creating legal documents. They educate you on ethical and legal capital raising strategies. Plus, they offer a host of free resources, including their best-selling capital raising books, numerous articles, and their popular podcast, Raise Private Money Legally. At syndicationattorneys.com, they do more so you can do more, more deals, bigger deals, and better deals. So if you want attorneys with premier experience helping syndicators and fund managers raise capital, go to syndicationattorneys.com today to schedule an appointment and unlock your maximum capital raising potential today. That's syndicationattorneys.com. This offer is not available to Florida residents.
That's really beneficial to hear, though. It makes a lot of sense, and the apartment investors who are doing larger multifamily that I know would concur with that sentiment, Gideon, that limited partner investors are more cautious when it comes to real estate investments, in part because a couple of things that you didn't mention. One of them is that sentiment around things like inflation is lagging behind actual inflation data. So it is likely that there is some causal or correlational relationship between that and sentiment about the market cycle for commercial multifamily lagging behind the, Let me get back on track. Gideon, your long-winded answer makes a lot of sense though. And it makes sense that while we may be experiencing a shift in the commercial multifamily market, the sentiment about the market may be lagging the actual shifts that we're experiencing when it comes to limited partner investors, especially because they are not as actively involved in their investments as you and I are in ours, if that makes sense. But also, there are people out there with 5% CDs. So it takes a lot more for a return to be compelling at the moment.
Yeah, and we're not seeing those compelling returns yet. There's still this disconnect, I think, between sellers and buyers, because a lot of sellers purchased in a 4-5 cap rate environment. So to sell in a 6 cap or higher environment where I believe we are today would cause equity losses or worse. So in order to get the returns that investors are looking for, there's going to have to be a reset in market pricing or a reduction in interest rates. And when you look at the forward curve for the 5-year treasury and the 10-year treasury, it looks like it's going to dip a bit in the next 3 years, but 3 years from now, literally, we're in the same place as we are today. Now, granted, the forward curves didn't do us any favors in 2021 when we were deciding if we should buy rate caps or not. But conservatively speaking, the only way that we're going to get to lower prices is for people that absolutely have to sell. And even in our portfolio, I'd be lying if I said that we didn't have some properties that aren't going according to plan. In fact, we bought 5 properties at the height of the market using bridge debt, and we're actively negotiating loan modifications with our lender. Thank goodness we've got a good relationship with the lender, and all 5 are with the same lender. So they're looking at us as a large aggregate loan amount to solve rather than 5 individual deals or 1 small individual deal. So we're getting that done. But that causes concern, I think, to a smaller, potentially unsophisticated in real estate LP. I'm on the newsletter. I get the emails from Best Ever. And just the other day, there was a video shared from a presentation last year about capital calls. And the presenter was prepping the audience. He was like, I'm sorry that I might bring you guys down, but everybody needs to know about this. And I thought it was probably one of the best presentations that could have been done at the beginning of last year, because for those who purchased properties in 2021 at the top of the market and who performed using a look back of the last 3 years of expenses, everything changed. Interest rates went up, values went down, and expenses ended up being a lot higher than we anticipated. So those business plans are upside down. So how are you going to solve for it? And I think that's what's going to shake out the syndicators that are here a few years from now from the ones who aren't. Are they well capitalized? Are they well trusted? How are they responding to adversity? You shouldn't really pick a sponsor for when times are good. You pick a sponsor for when times are more challenging. And how are they going to respond and do everything they can to protect your underlying investment? And so these are a lot of the things that my team and I are having to grapple with over the last 12 months. And the way I look at it is, if I want to benefit as an operator and a sponsor from the good times, I have to respond also during the more challenging times. And I think that that's where we are right now in this market cycle.
That's interesting that you bring that up. It was Neil Bawa, and he was one of the keynote speakers at the Best Ever Conference last year. So we're talking late March, early April of 2024. And he was talking about building a rescue fund to help investors who are getting caught in what investors have gotten caught in for the last year, or are in the process of negotiating with their lenders, Gideon. But it was a more somber tone at the conference in 23. And there were a lot of people saying things like, stay alive till 25. I can't miss the opportunity to plug the conference again. You were saying you're planning on attending or hoping to be there. I'll be there. So will all the other hosts of this podcast, including, of course, Joe Fairless. Fantastic networking opportunity. I always have great conversations with really high-level operators. In this context, I have to say operators and capital raisers and acquisitions people and all that, but people who are performing at a high level in what they do, I always have great conversations at the conference. Last question before we transition the episode. Gideon, with regards to the difficulties that are being experienced in the multifamily space right now, the debt difficulties for people who got short-term debt at the peak, the difficulties of expenses increasing while revenue stagnates or rent rates go down. Now that it's Q1 of 2024, are you in the stay alive till 25 camp, or what is your outlook right now?
I have a gentleman named Mark Benyus who works for me, who was around in the 90s when the stay alive till 95 phrase was coined. And he was sharing that with us as far back as 2022. I guess the short answer is yes, but it's not so dire. GSH will stay alive till 25 and much farther past that. But we have properties that we need to address inconsistencies with our business plan. Everything that you just said, there are much higher expenses than planned. Revenues are stagnant or even less than what they were. We found occupancies softening and delinquencies going up ever since 2022. And it's a much more challenging and management intensive time. And it's more of on a property by property basis. Can we stay alive in certain properties until 25 or after? I believe that real estate is a long-term play. And the more time that we can buy a property that might not be performing, the better we will all be. So if there's properties that I have that I'm modifying the loans on, it's in a purpose specifically to buy ourselves more time, because I believe that over time, 3, 5, 7, 10 years, we'll all do fine. We just need to get through an unforeseen, challenging period in this real estate cycle.
That makes a lot of sense. Gideon, are you ready for the best ever lightning round?
I'm ready. Bring it on.
What is the best ever book that you recently read?
I'm more of a listener, and I love listening to the All In podcast.
The All In podcast. Remind me who that is.
A group of tech investors and private equity investors, four guys that have been doing it for 3 or 4 years now. It's Chamath Palihapitiya, Jason Kalkanis, David Sachs, and David Friedberg. And they're not real estate guys, and I find their dialogue about current events and business in general fascinating on a weekly basis.
Nice. Gideon, what is your best ever way to give back?
My wife and I give back in a variety of ways, financially and with our time. I enjoy coaching and mentoring individuals who are younger than I am on a variety of different platforms, whether it be business, real estate, or relationship or personal growth opportunities. I love being able to help others and see them flourish. That's probably one of the most rewarding things that I've been able to be a part of.
Gideon, I'm going to change this question up. Within your current portfolio, I'm going to say debt structuring aside, what is the biggest mistake you've made and the best ever lesson you've learned from it?
There's a lot of mistakes and opportunities to learn throughout my career, and especially recently. But I would say for me, I was really interested in building a large portfolio. How many units can I have? Because the idea was, if I can get up to 10,000 or 20,000 units, that ongoing free cash flow is just massive. And that goal of building a large portfolio took me away from the fact that I had purchased a lot of assets that had really increased in value. And as there was talk about interest rates going up, I probably could have exited more than I did and taken more chips off the table, which would have made these last 2 years a little bit easier for me.
Is that an option that you were considering at the time?
No, not really.
Gotcha. That being said, Gideon, what is your best ever advice?
Success doesn't happen overnight. It's the stringing together of ongoing, daily, repetitive steps forward. Like, I work every day at setting that big, audacious goal and stepping towards that goal every single day and trying to detach from the outcome. And before I know it, I'm there or even farther.
Nice. And last question, where can people get in touch with you?
Shoot me an email at gideon@gshrealestate.com or check us out at www.gshrealestate.com.
Those links are in the show notes. Gideon, thank you. Best ever listeners, thank you as well for tuning in. If you've gained value from this episode, please do subscribe to our show. Leave us a 5-star review. Share this episode with a friend. And remember, the discount code for the conference tickets is Connect, CONNECT, for 15% off of the Best Ever Conference tickets. And that's at besteverconference.com. Thank you again and have a best ever day.
Thanks, Locum. Appreciate you having me on.
Hi, Best Ever listeners. Joe Fairless here again. And one last thing before you go, would you like to receive a short weekly email with proven tips from experienced investors, free tools and resources, and a roundup of the week's most relevant news and best ever content? Well, if so, join the community of nearly 15,000 commercial real estate passive and active investors who receive the Best Ever newsletter. Just go to bestevercre.com/access. And you'll get the very next one. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, thank you for listening and have a best ever day.